Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All righty, let's get things moving on a very gloomy Thursday out there. Be careful on the roads, folks. Not the safest place in the world to drive, this community we live in to begin with. Add a little rain, and people get a little crazy. So, you know, pay a little extra attention. Now, this topic that I'm going to open up with today is not just a football topic, but it's also kind of a baseball topic as well. And it pertains to the likely, at least at this point in time, we got to be careful who we give the Heisman Trophy to at this point in the season, because at one point, Geno Smith had a Heisman Trophy with his name on it, right? Through about four or five games of his final season at West Virginia, they were undefeated, and the guy had, I believe, more touchdowns than incompletions or something. He had some bananas statistics. He was just hitting Tavon Austin left and right. But right now, I think if a Heisman were awarded, it would probably go to Leonard Fournette, the 6'1", 230-pound monster that carries the football for LSU. And one of my buddies was texting me on Saturday night, and he said, when is LSU going to lose its horse? When is this guy going to get hurt? Like, they were overusing the heck out of him. And, you know, I threw it back at him. He's a Big Ten fan. And I said, well, when was the last time you complained about Wisconsin overusing Mane Ball, for instance, right? You're just bringing this up because you're an SEC dude, right? Wisconsin chews up its running backs pretty hard. And I hear today a quote from Les Miles, or rather I saw it on my run through the national websites and regional websites when I'm preparing for the show, on a pitch count for Leonard Fournette. There are a lot of people starting this conversation that he shouldn't carry the football but a certain amount of times because he is a certain professional. Like, if you look at him and you see, okay, he's a first-round pick, but he's a sophomore and he can't be draft eligible for another year and a half, do you at some point have an obligation to his health and his future draft status over, say, doing everything you can to beat Mississippi State? And this conversation's happening in the background. We're going to cut to Les Miles' audio and what he had to say to that question here in a moment. Also, this very same discussion is going on with Matt Harvey in Major League Baseball, the Mets ace coming off of Tommy John surgery. How many innings can he throw in a year? We heard the same thing with Steven Strasburg. I mean, heck, the Nationals may have cost themselves a championship by not using him in a postseason, trying to put his long-term prospects over short-term gains. He was coming off of Tommy John surgery as well and had a huge injury history. It is an idea that we are more and more sensitive to in modern sports. I mean, the idea, I mean, if we were sitting back here in the 80s and someone was complaining that a running back got 40 carries, I think the answer would be, okay, man up. Right, you got to be a man to play football for LSU. That would probably be the tone of the conversation. But now it's getting really trendy to say, okay, he should be able to go pro if he wants to, or maybe, hey, maybe they shouldn't overuse this guy. And given the tone of that conversation, I was very interested to look at his carry numbers, because I know his yardage numbers are huge right now. He's averaging 8.2 yards a carry. Through two games, he's got 387 on the ground and 6 touchdowns. Against Mississippi State and Auburn. There's not an FCS team in there that he ran for like 300 yards on. I mean, those are against, well, Auburn might not be very good this year, but those are at least against two conference teams. Leonard Fournette carried the ball 28 times against Mississippi State and 19 against Auburn. So the tone of this conversation, I think, is one that is kind of odd. Like, I think that it needs to happen. Like, if LSU had given him the rock 40 times back-to-back games and it looked like he took some savage hits out there, then I think you could ask these questions and say, hey, shouldn't we at least evaluate what part of his future we're putting at risk here? But, I mean, the guy's averaging 23.5 carries a game. I mean, that's nothing about that says let's sue Les Miles for like child endangerment, you know? And so it is interesting to hear him have to answer these questions when clearly, as an LSU fan, as an LSU coach, and as if you're Leonard Fournette, you're probably a really competitive dude. You want the ball in the best person's hand to try to win games. And Les Miles was asked about this very same topic, and he said that Leonard Fournette tends to get better the more touches he has.
Obviously, we want to take into account the specifics of our player. You know, he's a guy that seems to get warmed up the more reps he gets, and we wouldn't want to wear him out before we got to some of the key contests in our season. But in the same vein, it's awfully important that we win. And I think the first criteria is who's the guy that should touch the ball the most in that opportunity to win the game. I think he didn't take a snap in the fourth quarter last week. So I think in certain situations you can have the opportunity to, you know, to reduce his exposure. In other games, you want to give him every opportunity that he needs to get his carries. So it really kind of varies week to week.
Didn't play the fourth quarter against Auburn. 19 carries, 228 yards, 3 touchdowns. He had a full day's work. He got to rest in the fourth quarter. And then the idea of the pitch count is introduced, and this is Miles' reaction.
Yeah, I think it's if it was a pitch count, I think you could eliminate some of the great performances in college football. But we're still very cautious. We still want to. You know, we talk about it on the headsets routinely.
So that came on the SEC teleconference earlier today, and I kind of wonder where this is coming from, because his carry numbers aren't that big, but it is an interesting concept. When you have a running back that says NFL all over him, do you then have an obligation to control his pitch count, to control his snaps, to control the amount of carries he has? And it really does make me wonder, especially with a sport like football, it almost makes more sense to me in baseball, where an overuse injury is more likely to happen. Like with football, who the heck knows why knees blow up? I mean, how many times do we see somebody first week of the season in a non-contact injury just crumple up, right? I mean, Jordy Nelson in the preseason, it's not like you could say he ran too many routes this year, so he's hurt. I mean, it is an odd conversation to have, because in football, injuries are just going to happen at any point in time. I think the more interesting conversation perhaps is with regard to draft eligibility and why somebody like Jadeveon Clowney two, three, four years ago, why somebody like Leonard Fournette right now is forced to stay in the end of his third year when he's clearly good enough to play in the NFL. That's something that will never be fully explained to me. I mean, that's something that I will never understand. And right now the answer is, to me, it's because some combination of because we've always done it, A, and B, because it's easier on the NFL teams, right? Because it's easier for them to evaluate a college football player with 3 years of experience, 3 years of snaps. Sometimes they're redshirt sophomores, so they only have 2 years. But at the minimum, they're getting 2 years of actual film to look at and a lot of data to process and sift through. 3 years in a college program where you can ask a coach questions about the person's character, and it's harder to figure out. In the NBA, man, they got to scout internationally. They have a smaller sample size to work with regard to the draft. So it's a convenient situation for the owners. I guess my question to you guys today, 843-652-3776, is where does the obligation of the coach come in to limit the pitch count, either literally a pitch count in baseball or the carries of a running back, and sort of put that first and foremost over the team winning? And I think some of that can be seen here in the Grand Strand up in Clemson right now. Alex Ross, he's got an ankle issue right now. How much is he going to run against a pretty good Bryant defense on Saturday? That's more of a keeping him upright question. You know, if he runs too much in the first quarter, maybe he's not available. Deshaun Watson, a guy with a laundry list of injuries last year. Do you call any design runs for that guy? Or do you try and keep him in the pocket more? Raider Dave is on the line. Raider Dave, what do you got for us?
I worry that this talk is going to take us too close to the way things are in the NBA, the drafting for the NBA with all the one-and-done players. I personally believe I'm a very old school that you come to this school, you're getting your value in your education. If you're not, you're a moron. And so, yet, run them till they're through the ground completely. There's no guarantee they're going to the NFL. So, to me, it's a matter of they're there, they have their role that they're doing in exchange for their education, and that's their investment. So, use it up. You know, they don't have a responsibility, in my opinion, to save them for the NFL or the NBA or the MLB. That's my opinion on it, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Raider Dave. A lot of interesting things to dive through there. With football, Les Miles isn't going to have his job saved because Leonard Fournette has a good NFL career. Now, I'm not saying Les Miles is on the hot seat, but if LSU goes 5-7 this year after an underwhelming non-10-win season last year, it's not like he gets to then go to his athletic director and say, man, we would have won an extra two or three games, but I'm looking out for Fournette's NFL career. So college football coaches in particular are often forced into more short-sighted decisions. And I think that maybe this conversation, and I mean, this conversation wouldn't even have been happening 10 or 15 years ago, right? I mean, if you look at somebody who's averaging 23 carries a game, that doesn't even really seem like a lot in 2015. Maybe it's the fact that he carried 28 in week one or week two, and then in week three, he had 19 carries for the first three quarters. And so visually on TV, it looked like he was getting the rock a lot. But in football, I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea that you can't go to the draft until you're after your third year because of how much risk there is for injuries. And I get what Dave is saying. There's no guarantees that someone can make it to the NFL and that they are willingly entering into a situation where they get their education in return for football. And there are a lot of people in this country that would enjoy a free education. I'm not going to be one of those guys that says it's slavery by any means, but they also don't really have an option. I mean, you name somebody, I can't think of one, that didn't go to college and ended up playing in the NFL. Like, there isn't an example of, okay, five-star running back, didn't want to go be a bell cow at Alabama for 3 years and get 30 carries a game, and instead he worked out for 3 years and then just went right to the NFL draft. Like, that, there's not an example of that anywhere. Like, every once in a while, there's a Brandon Jennings who left from the NBA to Europe for 1 year so he could get paid and then go straight to the NBA. There's Kobe Bryant. There's Kevin Garnett. And on the same hand, you've also got Kwame Brown, right, who did not do nearly as well without college. I mean, we can have that conversation all day long. But it is interesting that with college football, and with a lot of the other sports in college, it's a really good exchange. It's a really good deal. I mean, I say this all the time. I mean, I got a portion of my education paid for by running track. I provided no economic value to William & Mary because I ran track. It was very nice of whatever booster put money in to the pot and what part of that came back to my scholarship. But with football, these guys are creating an economic value for the schools. And it is odd that they are getting paid in essentially a voucher that they can redeem for money later in life if they use it well. Like, if you went to work for a couple of weeks, you know, 2 weeks, you get your paycheck on Friday, and someone's like, here's what you won, a conference that makes you better at your job so that you can get to your bonuses. You'd probably be like, wait a second, that doesn't pay my rent. I don't want to go to a conference. I want actual money. And college athletes are paid in a different form of currency. They're paid in an education which they can redeem for currency, or they cannot value it at all. And that's up to the person and to the university to try to hold them accountable. But it is an interesting economy there. Like, they're providing a value to the university and they're not getting what the rest of us get in return, which is money. But I'm more interested in the where does the coach's obligation come in to try and preserve them for the future? Because, I mean, there's a guy at Clemson right now who, I mean, he's capable of running for what seems like anywhere from 5 to 50 yards whenever he needs to. But he doesn't look nearly as big and sturdy as the quarterback before him, Taj Boyd. I mean, when Taj Boyd carried the ball 18 or 20 times a game, a little thicker frame, didn't have a history of injuries to the same degree. I know he had one knee injury in his career, but it was a little more easier to swallow. And then you see him out there last year in a terrific game against South Carolina, but he rushes for two touchdowns wearing a knee brace because he's got a torn ACL. And it just makes you ask that question, where does the coach's obligation come in? Also, the Mets organization having this conversation with Matt Harvey right now with regard to his innings count, because they're going to head to the playoffs, and are they going to have his arm available? If you guys want to weigh in, 843-652-3776 is the number, and we're going to get to your calls next. This is Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Topic of the day, where does the coach or organization's responsibility come in to preserve an athlete's future? We're seeing that debate rage on right now in New York City with regard to Matt Harvey's arm and an innings restriction that may keep him from throwing it much in the playoffs. And also with regard to college running backs, Les Miles, not taking heat rounds, but getting questioned about what the right number of carries that Leonard Fournette should have on a given Saturday. 843-652-3776. We have Larry on the line. Larry, what do you got for us?
Hey, what's going on, bud?
Having a good one, man. What's up with you?
Man, I'm going to tell you what. I got to be straight up honest. Man, I think too many of us fans always fall on the side of the establishment. The players are a lot more like us than the owners or the heads of these universities, you know. But at the end of the day, to me, if an athlete can get paid, whether he's college or pro, especially pro, he should get every dime he can get. And you know why? Because they will drop you in a heartbeat if your skills diminish slightly.
Yeah, and it the difference in incentives are there in college and professional, right? So there's an ownership group in New York that has invested a draft pick, and they see an immense future value in Matt Harvey, who they hope will be a Cy Young caliber pitcher for the next 10 years. And that was the determination that Washington made with Strasburg to limit his innings as well. I worry in the climate of SEC football right now, with defensive linemen being lightning fast and 300 pounds, and Coach A is on the hot seat but has an all-SEC level running back, what is his incentive to look after that guy's future other than just being a good dude, right? I do worry more about the college athlete in this situation.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what I said. My nephew played college, played at South Carolina, and I was very proud. I was very thankful that they gave him 4 years of education. Okay, but let's be realistic. When you are a huge college football player and they get to sell your jersey, they get to sell your likeness, they're making that scholarship back tenfold. So, you know, I always say, and I've heard you comment on this before too, let's not kid ourselves like it's an even trade or anything.
Well, and also, Larry, the TV deals in football right now are just going through the roof. Like, you can't even compare money in 2015 to money in 2007. Like, the amount of money that ESPN is giving the SEC teams this year, I mean, they're getting $30 million on their TV payouts alone. That says nothing of concessions, you know, ticket sales, radio money, any of that. I mean, it's a crazy degree of money, and it's worth revisiting this conversation. There really isn't an answer to it right now, but I do appreciate the call.
Thank you.
843-652-3776. Sam is on the line. Sam, where does the coach or organization's responsibility to protect player safety come in these kind of calls? Don't have Sam. Sam dropped.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh,
sorry, man.
Yeah,
delay on your phone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Sam, don't apologize. I think maybe was Brian late on the trigger finger there?
It was my fault.
Okay, wow. We appreciate accountability on Sound Off, Brian. So we're not gonna take away any helmet stickers for that. All right, fire away, Sam.
Call me Brian. Hey, when it comes to Leonard Fournette or any of these college kids who are being what we're considering overused, we gotta remember who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with an athlete that if we gave him the option, he would run the ball every single down. He wouldn't even think about it twice. And we also got to realize that these guys' ultimate goal is to go to the NFL. And the way they do that is to showcase their talent. For every run this kid's going to do in college, whether it be 2 years, 3 years, whether it be 40 carries a game, whatever it might be, each opportunity is another chance for him to showcase his talent and make his draft stock go higher. So I don't know that it's really the responsibility. I don't think the coach's responsibility to save him. Now, granted, if he's hurt or he appears to be hurt, that's when the coach will step in and say, hey, son, you know, let's take it easy to this game. We've got 11 more to go, whatever it might be. But when it comes to overuse, especially in the college, especially these kids who are good enough to be overused, I don't really think that's an issue because, again, you give them the option. They're going to run the ball every time they get a chance to. And, you know, again, they're going to showcase their talent. You guys have a good day, man.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Sam. Excellent point. Every once in a while I have something in my notes that I forget to get to. But Sam really hits the nail on the head there. Like, Leonard Fournette's a competitive dude. If he's in a tight game with Mississippi State and the 40th carry is what wins the game, he's going to want to take the 40th carry. So, and that was the issue with RG3 and the Shanahans a couple of years ago. RG3 wanted to be out there on the field regardless of the way his knee felt. I mean, he was battling to get back in the game, and people have this perception of Mike Shanahan like he was some butcher, right? He was like Ulysses S. Grant in the Civil War. He's just throwing all of his soldiers out there just to get killed, knowing that he had enough to overwhelm the South. That was not Shanahan, right? I mean, Shanahan's he's out there, and RG3 is basically telling everybody he's good to go and begging to get back in the game. And that's got to be an incredibly tough situation when you are in the moment. Like, Les Miles has enough to think about on Saturday afternoon trying to win. He's trying to beat Mississippi State. He's got all of these factors going through his head. How much time is left in the game? How many timeouts does he have? You know, chatter in his headset between his coordinators on what plays they're about to call, his input on play calling. I mean, all those things are going through his head. Is he really sitting there and saying, okay, Leonard's got 28 carries, we can't give him to 30 today? And you never know which carry it's going to be. I mean, the ultimate tragedy here that's lingering in the background of this conversation, a running back who had professional-level talent, got drafted but never got to play in a professional game because of injuries sustained in college, that's Marcus Lattimore. And I don't know that if he ran the ball fewer times, if he wouldn't have gotten hurt. I mean, who knows? I mean, what if South Carolina had him on a pitch count, snap count, carry count, whatever you want to call it, would he have not had two devastating knee injuries? And you never know. You never know how much of each of those two injuries was just pure circumstance about how he planted in one direction. I mean, he had two games his freshman year where he had 37 carries and 40 carries, both in wins over SEC opponents. One was Georgia and one was Florida. That's an awful lot. But Marcus Lattimore probably would have been furious if he didn't get the ball, knowing that he had a chance to allow his teammates to win. I mean, those guys, they're competitive. They want to win. They don't want to let their teammates down. And it is interesting. In baseball, I feel like it's way easier to manage this conversation because you basically can take a look at someone's pitches within a game, and you can also take a look at their innings on the season without having to deal with the chaotic nature of football. I'm not trying to act like managers don't make difficult calls in the middle of a game, but the pace of it at least is a little slower. And with Harvey, it's in regard to his innings on the season. And they've had this conversation internally forever now. It's not like it's sneaking up on them. I think it's a much harder call with football players. And it is interesting, especially with running backs, because I don't know as football decision makers and football fans, the GMs of the world, the coaches of the world, I don't really think there's a consensus on how important running backs are. You know, like, you hear all the time, oh, don't take a running back in the first round, right? It's more about the offensive line. You need durability, and the difference between a first round running back and a fifth round running back really isn't that much. And then you see somebody like Adrian Peterson, you're like, nah, I think that first round pick was pretty well spent in that situation. Trent Richardson, not so much. But you see that over and over again, and you see teams more often than not splitting backs. Like the D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart setup that the Carolina Panthers had for years and years, where they had running back 1A and 1B. It didn't matter who was number one on the depth chart. And then those guys, you know, I don't want to say complaining, but they both kind of suggest that they're better when they get more touches late in the game, right? I wonder how much of that's like a shooter having to come off the bench and not being warmed up when you're a running back and you're splitting carries with somebody else. Like Coastal Carolina, like next time I interview Coach Mowgli, I'll ask him about this. D'Angelo Henderson is a threat to take the ball to the house anytime he touches it. He might be the best offensive player in the FCS this year. And I wonder, I mean, his pro potential is nowhere near Leonard Fournette's. And that guy wants the ball. I wonder if in the back of Mowgli's mind, if they think about, okay, over the course of a season, how many carries do you want to give the kid? Because there are a lot of studies done in professional running backs that cross the 300 carry mark and how good they are later in their career, and there's usually regression. That's another reason why you don't see high draft picks spin on running backs an awful lot, is this notion that a running back's career is a flash in the pan. You draft a quarterback with that first round pick and he's good. Like Tom Brady, he can be excellent still in his late 30s. I mean, what running back besides Emmitt Smith was really excellent into his 30s? It's hard to come up with a long list of names. Like Jerome Bettis was still good in short yardage situations. Adrian Peterson's around 30 right now. He had a year of tread removed, or that where tread was not removed from his tires because he was sitting out last year. But at the same time, like having a really good running back, that's no doubt an advantage. But it is interesting to see the draft value of running backs, and now this conversation that's kicking in. You know, how many carries is right versus wrong? I mean, I had this conversation with Myrtle Beach head coach Mickey Wilson with regard to Brandon Sinclair, his star running back 2 years ago. Brandon was a sophomore at the time, and their passing offense was struggling early in the season, and Sinclair had a couple of 40-carry games. And he said, you know, it's in the back of my mind, but he's a strong kid. We wouldn't give him the ball if we didn't think it was unhealthy. They ended up winning the state championship that year. And Brandon Sinclair is going to go to Old Dominion on a scholarship next year. So it's not like any aspect of his career that we know of has been limited by the fact that his number was getting called an awful lot as a sophomore. 843-652-3776. If like Raider Dave, Larry, and Sam, you guys want to weigh in on where a coach or an organization's obligation to protect a player's future, a la pitch count or carry count, comes in versus, hey, just tell them to play the game and compete to the best of their ability. You guys have thoughts on this topic, you let us know. Sound off with us, 843-652-3776. Also, some interesting numbers on jersey sales in the NFL with regard to the Carolina Panthers that I wasn't exactly expecting. That's coming up next on Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Fun discussion earlier in the show about a coach's obligation toward a player's future. Running backs, carries. Leonard Fournette, perhaps at LSU, is he toting the rock too much? 23 carries a game does not really seem like too much. I mean, that seems like a healthy number, right? If you're going into an SEC game, you're playing Mississippi State or Auburn. Now, keep in mind, LSU goes into these games. If they lose to somebody in their division, their ability to win a national championship, which they are surely competing for, becomes way more difficult. And they held him out of the fourth quarter against Auburn. So in this, I think it's a valid discussion to be having. I just don't think that he is the prime example of somebody who needs to be protected at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a player being that young and that early in their career, they don't really need to be on a pitch count unless the numbers were absolutely ridiculous, which I don't think his are that crazy. The only time I've ever think where it was kind of out of control was last year in Dallas with DeMarco Murray, where he's contracts up and they're pretty much just wearing him into the ground, knowing that he's probably not coming back to the team.
You know what the most flagrant example of that I can think of in recent memory is? About 7 or 8 years ago, when the Brewers picked up CC Sabathia at the trade deadline, they knew they were renting him. He was a free agent. They got him from Cleveland. They were barely in the wild card race. The Brewers hadn't been to the playoffs in a while, and they drove the hell out of that rental car. I mean, they were squealing out at red lights. They were taking that thing up to 100 miles an hour on the highway. They were taking turns tight. They were like the person who got the Mustang or the Charger rental car and just drove the hell out of it. Like, they were throwing Sabathia complete games on 3 days rest. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, oh, Yankees fans are going to love this, right? Someone is taking their future asset and wearing him out. And you look at the guy now, and it's either two reasons why. Maybe it's natural aging. CC Sabathia's not as good anymore. Maybe it's because he can't be good unless he's fat. That's a valid concern. All right, the guy lost 30 or 40 pounds, and he seemed to lose his ability to pitch. And then it's like, well, I don't know. How many years of his career did Milwaukee remove in their pursuit of a playoff spot?
That reminds me of, who is it for the Braves that was accused of, like, getting a rental car and just, like, ramming you with it?
Oh, that was Greg Maddux. That was one of the many unusual and terrific stories about Greg Maddux that teammates have shared throughout the course of the years. Now, I suppose if you guys want to get in the mix, 843-652-3776 is the number. We'll take a call. But we're going to move on from that discussion right now. I saw something earlier today on blackandbluereview.com, which is a terrific website for Panthers coverage. Bill Voth does an excellent job. And there are a couple of things. Starlo Tulele likely to be back this weekend. Keekly on a normal concussion protocol. So those are some injury updates. But I saw something. Jersey sale numbers are always interesting to me because they're kind of a proxy for popularity. But in this situation, Dick's Sporting Goods released their jersey sales for all their stores nationwide. And what different conferences and teams accounted for the most jersey sales? And the NFC South only accounted for 9% of total jersey sales, but the Panthers are dominant within that 9%. They have more jersey sales combined than Tampa Bay, Atlanta, and New Orleans, which I thought was kind of interesting. But also looking at this chart, the Cleveland Browns outsell everybody in jerseys by almost 2-1. That makes me think they're just a bunch of Dick's Sporting Goods in Cleveland. I mean, listen, they're great fans, but you would think it would be Cowboys, Steelers, Giants. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's one of those original NFL brands, you know, their move notwithstanding. But I just wouldn't expect the Browns to lead in jersey sales.
Is it Johnny Manziel driving that? I mean,
I don't know. I mean,
what other jersey would you get? A Joe Hayden jersey, maybe?
See, the commentary on this is only with regard to Panther stuff. And what's interesting is it says Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly, his number 59 is the sixth best-selling jersey of NFL players at Dick's, ahead of Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, and Aaron Rodgers. I would not have thought Kuechly's jersey is that popular. Like, middle linebacker, that's not a flashy position. First of all, he's not a quarterback, he's not a running back, he's not a receiver, so he's not popping up on your fantasy team. And there's absolutely nothing that Luke Kuechly does besides play excellent football that's flashy at all. You never hear about him dating models. You never hear a soundbite from him that's interesting at all. Like, the guy is kind of like he almost seems like fictional, right? Like, almost too good at football, studies film all day, gets in no trouble. He's a good-looking dude. Like, you know, it just, what could he do that would ever be wrong?
But he's a figment of your imagination.
Yeah, Lewis. Exactly.
Not really out there.
But I wouldn't have expected his jersey to be selling that well. Like, because if you're talking about national jersey sales, it's either that or, like, everybody in Charlotte feels like it's their obligation to get a number 59 jersey. But I just wouldn't have expected, and Cam's not even listed there. I mean, clearly his jersey has to be selling well, too. But I wouldn't have anticipated Kuechly to have better jersey sales than Cam.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't expect that. I would expect probably Cam, then Kelvin Benjamin, and then Kuechly, just because positions they play.
It is interesting that you watch a Panthers broadcast, and they try very hard to make Kuechly interesting in commercials. Like the security alarm commercials where he's tackling people, and the Pepsi commercials where he's making bad puns with his name. And I respect anybody's bad pun game. It is fun to try to watch him become a product endorser. It would not have crossed my mind that Luke Kuechly would have a better selling jersey than Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers. Now, that's not NFL.com. That's not nationwide. That's just simply in Dick's. I mean, what it could be is that maybe there's not a Dick's in Denver. I don't know.
I think a lot of those players would have to do is they've been in the league for a while. So if you're going to have one of their jerseys, you probably already have it already. I mean, it's not like it's anything new that Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers is a good player. And I'm sure many Green Bay Packers fans or Broncos fans, except for right when he got traded, didn't have a Peyton Manning jersey, but I'm sure they all already got their jerseys that they need, so maybe it's something to do with that.
Speaking of the Panthers, terrible segue. I heard something on our morning show, The Drive, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. every Monday through Friday this morning. Aaron and Pat pulled this clip. The Spanish language call of Cam Newton's touchdown flip against Houston.
Se va a meter, se va a meter, se va a meter. ¡Volaste como Superman, mi querido dinosauro! ¡Vuela que vuela! ¡Vuela que vuela! ¡Touchdown! 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 ¡Báilele! 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 ¡Mi querido dinosauro! ¡Las Panteras le ponen 6 puntos más al marcador!
And I thought Joe Cashin's call of D'Angelo Henderson's cutback city run against Furman was energetic. I thought his call of Devin Brown's kickoff return for a touchdown last week was energetic. He's got nothing on those dudes.
Yeah, they went all in.
I need Spanish language sportscasters to just narrate me doing things. Like bust through a yellow light, get through it in time. You know, just little things throughout the course of the day.
You don't drive like that. You drive nice and safe.
I am an excellent driver. Actually, I have not been ticketed since 2006. So how about that?
Ooh, you should Nearly not a decade. Have just said that.
Nearly a decade. I don't think there are any officers in Myrtle Beach. I don't think they're anywhere.
I saw 5 literally on our road in front of our station today.
They're all looking for other people because I'm a safe driver. No, it is funny to hear the passion. I think that's in sports casting there should be passion. I mean you should, but it is crazy to hear the difference in two cultures in the way that that's treated. Like if you listen to a soccer game, and maybe I think maybe it might be the soccer influence on football. Like in soccer, 1-0 wins sometimes, so a goal is epic. A goal can be like 30 points in a football game. Like what if, you know?
Well, there was one of those after week 1 after the Packers game. Mason Crosby hit like a 27-yard field goal, and the guy went crazy. Like it was the most amazing thing you'd ever seen. It's like that's shorter than an extra point now.
Routine play. We're gonna reframe this discussion in case anybody wants to get in on 843-652-3776. Les Miles being asked about Leonard Fournette's pitch count, so to speak, as a running back. This is what he had to say.
To account the specifics of our player, you know, he's a guy that seems to get warmed up the more reps he gets, and we wouldn't want to wear him out before we got to some of the key contests in our season. But in the same vein, it's awfully important that we win. And I think the first criteria is who's the guy that should touch the ball the most in that opportunity to win the game. And I think he didn't take a snap in the fourth quarter last week. So I think, you know, in certain situations you can have the opportunity to, you know, to reduce his exposure. In other games, you want to give him every opportunity that he needs to get his carries. So it really kind of varies week to week.
That might be the most uninteresting Les Miles cut I've ever heard. I mean, it's a valid discussion to have, but that he didn't seem like he was having any fun with that. There was no grass eating.
Well, why does he want to take his best player off the field? Like, you saw how dominant he was. Fireman carried through the guy off of him while he's running.
No, he's a horse. I mean, he is very good. I don't know who I'd rather have between him and Chubb. Both of those guys are. I mean, the Georgia offense is way better than the LSU offense. So Fournette is more important to his team. But if I'm having to choose Fournette or Chubb, I'm not ready to make that call yet. I don't know which one I'd rather have. Maybe I'd lean Fournette just because I've seen more from him. But
I think he's just been a little bit more impressive, like just the runs he's broken out and obviously the tackles he's broken.
Yeah. I mean, but I think Georgia has a more complete offense around Chubb. So I think that Fournette's going to see bigger numbers. We're going to see more of those wow plays where he's just carrying a pile.
I mean, Chubb was going up against South Carolina. I mean,
ooh,
Kentucky's running back went off on them.
Careful. Yeah, it was interesting to me. I had to watch the South Carolina-Georgia game on DVR. I couldn't watch it live because I was covering Coastal. And the first couple of drives, it was just the South Carolina defense had no aggression to it. They weren't trying to make plays. It was like, let's try and put out fires once they happen. Let's try to make sure that they don't burn us on a huge play. It was remarkable to me how far back their defensive players defensive backs were playing on receivers and how easy it was for Grayson Lambert to paper cut them to death, like 5-7 yard strikes. It's like, no wonder the guy went 24-25. Everything inside of 10 yards was wide open. Anyways, Georgia's offense does look quite good. Because, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, 24-25 for Grayson Lambert, there are a lot of dudes that can't do that in walkthroughs, right? I mean, as poorly as South Carolina's defense was playing, they did have 11 guys out there in pads on scholarship. That's kind of hard to do. Anyways, Thursday night football tonight, it will probably be as sloppily played as ever, and we will probably watch every minute of it because we have an addiction to football, and everyone wants to know how their fantasy team's going to do. Or maybe you're a New York Giants fan or a Redskins fan. I have a feeling this one tonight's going to be pretty ugly. You've got a Giants team who specializes in giving up second-half leads.
There's Redskins fans?
And a Redskin fan who is... Are you optimistic if you're a Redskins fan right now? Got a surprising...
Redskins fans are always optimistic.
Surprisingly salty defense this year. Kirk Cousins? Is he the future?
Captain Kirk.
Brian said something absolutely ridiculous about the two quarterbacks in this game. We're going to get into that. And who we've got against the spread. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. With regard to our conversation on pitch counts and carries and where the organization or coach's responsibility comes in to protect the athlete, Texter writes in, I think if anyone's on a rookie contract and they're holding out or limiting themselves because they're thinking of their career, while I don't agree with it, I understand. However, anybody on a long-term deal, injuries aside, should be expected to play 100% of the year if healthy. I think that's an interesting point because I was kind of looking at it from amateur versus professional as the drawing line where my antennas are up and I'm more likely to say, hey, you should not be using that guy as much, right? Especially if it's a freshman running back in the SEC, if he's getting 40 carries like Lattimore did in a win over Georgia, then you're like, yeah, I realize that win's very important, but are you doing the best thing possible for this guy? That texture brings up the really interesting point. Matt Harvey on a rookie deal. I mean, he's probably making 500 grand this year, but he's trying to negotiate a deal that probably is going to pay 20 million annually. So that is a significant difference. I mean, that's getting into the Russell Wilson conversation on his potential holdout over the summer and what he could play for this year. When rookie deals set up a situation where somebody has become a star and they're no longer properly compensated, it's one thing like Cam Chancellor, you want to hold out. It's like, dude, you signed that contract last year. Like, rookie deals have slotted values. So that's, you know, that's another situation that I hadn't, another wrinkle that I hadn't thought of in this discussion. But yeah, I guess I have more sympathy for guys on rookie contracts in that situation. Now, we were talking about the Heisman Trophy earlier with regard to the Fournette or Chubb. Turns out those are the top two gentlemen right now on Bovada's Heisman odds. Leonard Fournette, number one. Nick Chubb, number two. Trevone Boykin is third. Ezekiel Elliott and Kessler round out the top five. Now, Deshaun Watson is 10th. Chad Kelly might be your best odds at 12. Just got that big win over Bama. He's a volatile dude, but you know he's going to run and throw for a lot. Like,
there's no way he gets it.
Hugh Freeze is going to let that guy rip, man.
After that ridiculous play, there's no way he gets that.
Hey, luck's on his side, man. I can't imagine Saban's blood pressure when that happened. Bungled snap and a rebound throw, like a deflection turns into a touchdown. Not even the receiver he was anticipating.
He's probably still mad about it.
I think Nick Saban likes to control things more than any human in the world. Like, I think that dude loves control. Like, you can just tell it's his personality. Imagine that. Deflection. Touchdown. Had to be irate. Had to have been really mad. Man, I've been trying to find anything substantial in these Alabama rumors today with Lane Kiffin. I'm not going to mention them on the air. Perhaps it's irresponsible of me to mention that there are, like, you guys can't Google what they are. But
it's like I have a secret, but I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, well, okay. The rumor is that Lane Kiffin may have had an extramarital affair with somebody who he shouldn't have in Tuscaloosa. And that's why he was going to resign today, but he clearly hasn't resigned today. And that just shows you how unfortunate it is in the Twitter landscape of how quickly a rumor can spread. Like, there was a rumor that spread about Jay Wright 2 years ago that didn't go anywhere. Like, it just wasn't true, but everybody retweeted it because I think people just, you hear a story sometimes and you're like, okay, that fits with that person, right? There are a lot of people in certain areas of the country, maybe Knoxville, Tennessee, who have an axe to grind with Lane Kiffin. Maybe Los Angeles, California. Maybe Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Doesn't have a lot of allies anywhere, so I would be cautious. I would be cautious in believing any story about Lane Kiffin because everybody wants it to be true, right? Everybody wants to see that guy kicked when he's down. Anyways, Thursday night football tonight, it's going to be atrocious, and I'm still going to watch it. New York Giants favored by 4 against Brian's Washington Redskins.
My Washington Redskins? That's a funny statement.
You're from Northern Virginia, Brian. It's in your blood. You got to own it.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, it is interesting looking at this game to think, like, even though neither of these teams are expected to make big playoff pushes, and that's where college football is a little different than professional football, right? In a college game, you think that the situation's dire. Like, Alabama needs Ole Miss to lose twice to have a shot at winning the national championship. Like, that happens already in this season. Now, you can throw out the stats with 0-2 teams with the Giants, but there is about one team every year that makes it back from 0-2. So, that you know, their name's not on a tombstone yet like it would be if they were 0-2 in college football. But I do wonder how long the leash is for both of those coaches, right?
I've been hearing Coughlin's going to be out forever, but
yeah. And the Giants are extraordinarily patient with coaches. Just like, maybe not to the extent like the Steelers. The Steelers have had 3 coaches in like 40 years. But the Giants, I mean, that's not really a team that flips around coaches like the Raiders. And it's very rare that you see a coach with a championship getting run. I mean, there really aren't many 2 championship coaches that you can think of in college or professional that have gotten forced out anywhere. Like, Shanahan's act got a little tired in Denver, and he moved on. Jerry Jones has had squabbles with Jimmy Johnson and Tom Landry, but that's Jerry Jones. There's a common denominator there. Like, how often do you see somebody with 2 championships just getting run out of town? I mean, and they say it every year with Coughlin, like he's on the hot seat. I mean, everybody's ready to fire him. And they both of the times when they won the Super Bowl, but hey, maybe luck's on his side.
Expecting Captain Kirk to outduel Simple Jack tonight.
Is that what we're calling Kirk Cousins? Is that like a legitimate nickname, Captain Kirk, or is that?
I've heard it. I don't know if that's his legitimate nickname.
One of my friends calls him Kirkle. I don't think he has a lot of faith in Kirkle.
I'm excited to see Matt Jones again tonight, see if he can keep up last week's performance. That should be interesting.
I think the Giants are going to win this game. I can't imagine coming off of blowing 2 leads like they have the past 2 weeks and being at home in front of their fans. Like, they got to get on the board. Like, they got to get a W here.
It's what Eli does best.
Eli's got some jewelry he wants to show you, Brian. Where is this irrational Eli Manning hatred coming from?
He's garbage.
He's not garbage.
He is garbage.
It is interesting that he's the opposite of his brother, though, right?
Yeah, I can't.
Mediocre regular seasons followed by two legendary postseason runs.
It's the same argument with your Jordan Robert Horry thing. Oh, you want to count the rings? Like, he didn't earn those rings. His team earned the rings.
His defensive line, Jason Pierre-Paul.
Yeah.
How does he wear his rings now?
Oh, I was waiting for it. I was like, where's the finger pun?
Oh, that's messed up.
At least he's got another hand.
Yeah, he does. He's only got 2 rings, and I think.
And he didn't lose the ring finger. That was the one finger that didn't get him.
I think he has both of his ring fingers, right? It's one of his index fingers and one of his thumbs that are struggling, and maybe a joint on another finger.
Yeah.
So I think he does have ring wearing capabilities in general, and he does have. No, does he have 1 or 2? I can't remember if he was on the 07 team. I feel like he's too young for that. He's probably
just on the most current team. They still had a nasty old D line. I mean, though, they had OC. Kiwanuka.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to go Giants -4 here. They're at home. They got to win, man. They got to come on out and deliver a strong performance tonight. That's the thing, is they've looked good. Like, they should have beat Dallas. Like, that time management situation was absurd. That was maybe the worst that I've ever seen. All right, let's hit a real quick call of the day. We're giving this one to Sam for mentioning that with regard to carry counts, Leonard Fournette wants the football.
We got to remember who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with an athlete that if we gave him the option, he would run the ball every single down. He wouldn't even think about it twice.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to win, and he wants to deliver results for his teammates. So it's just it's a nuance. It's a tough conversation all the way around. But he's also not getting paid, and hopefully the guy can make it to his professional contract with a healthy set of legs. All right, Sports Talk's next. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 p.m., so join us.